Hello, and welcome to All You Pretty Things, Legends of Philadelphia. These are your hosts, Tony, Klaus, Nomi, and his schoolyard chum, Johnny Iggy Pop Zito. I guess you're the most Iggy Pop out of all three of us.
And I'm the most Klaus Nomi.
I'm Brian Mata Hoople-Bierman, helping out on engineering and editing duties.
You're a young dude.
Yeah. You might be wondering, how many times have these guys watched Labyrinth? Well, in addition to being Philadelphia natives, Trove and Zito have a lifestyle brand, South Fellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes and comfort and podcasts and space oddities. Mm. Lots of times, customers will ask, is Queen Bitch married to the King of Prussia? Or they want to know when Trove and Zito are going to release their shot-for-shot remake of Dancing in the Streets. It's in the vault, the South Fellini vault.
Zito is always Bowie in this situation, but I'm Bowie when we do Under Pressure.
Right.
That's
right.
Just how it is.
That's the trade-off.
So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, so we're hoping to share that with you.
Dancing in the streets.
Yeah, I'm fired up. You know, what happens when like your two of your favorite artists make like the something you hate?
It feels like there should be like a German word for that.
I can't even like it ironically. I can't even like it ironically or be like, oh, no, it's cool, dude. It's you awful. Don't like it. I can't even pretend.
No.
Wait, we already did an episode on David Bowie.
We did do an episode.
It's Bowie week this week, so there's all these different events you can look up. I think it's Philly Loves Bowie or Philly the, Bowie Week.
Look DJ up. Robert Drake throws that.
Oh, does he have a thing?
I'm pretty sure he's part with XPN and all that. Speaking of music, breakout musical stars, me.
Who cares about this David Bowie guy?
Up and comer, Tony Trove.
This Wednesday, new Hoagie Way video on our YouTube channel.
What's it going to be on? What's the
topic? It's broadcasting and news, headlines.
Headline Hoagie Wave coming at you.
Headline Hoagie Wave.
Is Jim Gardner
January
in it?
January 11th.
Yeah. And I put the KYW ticker in my sequencer. So for all breaking news, for all you listeners, you'll recognize that. Like, who is it for? Who is this for? Who is this for? Nope. Doesn't make any sense.
It's for me. It's for me.
For Zito.
You make music for me. I make videos for you.
Yeah. And we make this both for Chris Gormley, I guess, who's our friend if you are a listener. It's all for you, Chris. And we have new stickers coming out this week, right?
Yeah, we have new stickers coming
every,
out.
Every week.
Every week.
Every week. The store's open every week, all the time.
No, the store's back, open baby. Thursdays to Sundays.
2023 is a new year, new us. Mm-hmm.
So when is the store actually open?
Thursdays to Sundays, 12
whenever
to 5.
Whenever Hunter shows up, I guess.
You're trying to promote people
I am, and it, but that is Thursday through Sunday, 12 to 5.
The true answer.
Don't you want to come to our store?
Yeah, and get fed riddles.
There's no prices on all these things.
If you answer three of our riddles, we give you a secret to eternal happiness. It's
answer me these questions three. We let you use the bathroom if you answer these three riddles.
Don't say that. This isn't Longwood Gardens. You can't use the bathroom here.
Sorry, we cut that pyramid. Sorry.
It's going to start a thing. People are going to be coming up to Hunter being like, I really got to go. What's the first riddle?
What are the riddles? Tell me the riddles.
I'm going to go.
Just pee outside like everyone else. Dogs do it. How come I can't?
Plenty of people pissing shit on the street.
You can. There's a lawless city. You can do whatever you pee as you please.
Dog. And people do.
Mm-hmm. And they do. The parade was last week.
Yeah, there's gold spray paint all over the side.
Yeah. Gold spray paint and gold everything, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The same people who hate graffiti are spray painting the fucking sidewalks bright gold.
It looks
when
like
the cops get to let loose, Spearman.
It's like the shadow when something gets blown up by the atom bomb. All that's left are these little outlines of golden slivers. It's like these mummers were vaporized on the spot.
Too much.
David Bowie.
So like Bierman was saying, we were going to do an episode on David Bowie of the 1980s, but then Bierman pointed out that on April 28th,
David Bowie in the 80s sucks.
No.
What?
No, that's
for
not.
What? A lot. Half of it.
What? You're...
No, that's...
I thought you were the biggest Bowie
that's
fan.
Twin Peaks,
I guess you have...
I am.
You're crazy.
I'm man... No, that's not... That's 90s.
That's his... Was it?
Oh, it was a Nine Inch Nails one? Yeah, that's not cool.
That's a whole thing. But no, so we were going to talk about 80s. He played at Vet Stadium, but we're going to save that. He also played this in 83. 83 was good. But Dancing in the Street into the 87 shit, that shit sucks. So we'll do that next year.
That's future Legends of Philadelphia's problem.
Oh, it's.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear that.
I'll stick around for next year.
But yeah, he recorded a live album called Stage here at the Spectrum over two nights in 1978. But I guess most of it is recorded here, and a couple of the songs are recorded elsewhere. But
yeah,
most of it was recorded here.
We were going to do this episode on 80s Bowie, but like Bierman said, he played here in 78. On April 28th, and performed the first date of a two-night stand in Philadelphia, a performance which, along with The Next Night, would be utilized to create his second live album. Stage was recorded on the Isolar 2 tour and released through RCA Records in 1978. Join us as we listen to David Bowie live at the Spectrum.
Join us.
Won't you?
Won't you? That's from mine and Zito's favorite podcast. It's not this one.
It's not.
Your favorite podcast isn't this one?
No.
I only like half of this podcast.
Yeah, I only like one third of this podcast.
Only
to be more
one third.
Specific.
Quick shout out. You must remember this, mine and Zito's favorite podcast. The Erotic 80s.
We got to get more erotic on this show. I keep saying it.
And every episode's erotic. What are you talking about?
That could be more, though.
Oh.
Could be more erotic.
We can wear thongs when we record.
I already do.
I've
been doing since day one.
Oh.
That's how I get this octave when I speak. Let's talk a little bit about the Tower Theater album and how influential Philly was to Bowie. We did a whole episode on this, so if anybody wants to go back and listen to it, the David Bowie Live at the Tower Theater episode, there's a lot in there. But just the basics are he came to Philly. He loved it. He kind of put his tour on pause. He switched up his sound. And then when
he got addicted to roast pork,
he got addicted to long hots and roast pork. That's true.
Long hots and roast pork.
And Philadelphia soul.
And Philadelphia soul.
And he was like, I'm going to do this. And so he started doing that.
And then he went back out on tour and that was his new sound. So his time in Philadelphia was very influential on him.
And then he recorded Young Americans here. And then
I don't know how to, you know, it's weird. Like everyone's like New York, New York, New York. And then it's like, here's like the coolest, one of the coolest people ever. And he's like, actually Philly. And yeah. That is like, yeah, that.
That's know, something the coolest person like, in the world would do.
You know, and it's all. Yeah, and you have like an Andy Warhol and New York, New York. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was, oh man, Bowie likes Philly. That is something cool about that.
So he says this on. So this isn't actually on the live album, but there's bootlegs. He says in before these shows. The first night. I'm happy to be in Philadelphia tonight. It's one of our favorite cities. 4 years ago, we recorded our live album, David Live, here, and we like the results so much, we've decided to record our second live album here over the next two nights. So, I mean, like, he, like, loved it here.
Yeah. And I said this on the other episode about Bowie. When I was growing up, I thought that Bowie Live was like, it's hard to tell the difference when something is a local thing or a national thing or a worldwide thing. Because when you're being watching local media, you know, what's the difference between Captain Noah's live album and David Bowie's live album? You know, they're both live, local live records.
Both,
you know,
fuck fests, awful.
Fueled by cocaine. Yes, it's true. That's
people,
for sure.
People make love to Captain Noah and David Bowie. But it's hard to tell the difference between something's local or not, because especially because the album is so shoddily put together.
Which is Philadelphia.
That's how we do it here.
Good enough. Good enough, as we say around here.
The Isolar 2, the 1978 World Tour, more commonly known as the Low Heroes World Tour or the Stage Tour, was a worldwide concert tour by David Bowie. The tour opened on 29 March 1978 at the San Diego Sports Arena, continuing through North America, Europe, and Australia, before reaching a conclusion at the Nippon Budokan in Japan on 12 December 1978.
I just watched wrestling from there the other night.
You just watched? Are you staying up late tonight, Brian?
Yes.
Why?
Because, I mean, I'll quickly get into this, but you can't have me talk about David Bowie and Japanese wrestling and expect me to, like, not go on for 2 hours. But, yeah.
There's steam coming out of his ears. He's going to overload.
Oh, I'm so excited. Wrestle Kingdom.
There goes his hat.
Yeah, Wrestle Kingdom comes on at 1:20 a.m. And I'm going to be up till like 7 in the morning watching it. It's the biggest show. It's Japan's. It's their WrestleMania.
New Japan Wrestling?
Yeah, it's New Japan's biggest show. And this year, they finally can.
Is this the one you went to a couple years ago?
Yeah.
And
The one I went to was the last one you could make crowd noise at, because the crowds can't make noise. They can clap and shit.
Is that because
it's illegal?
It's gonna be because Japan is very different with
like,
COVID.
It's a COVID. Gotcha.
A COVID thing. Yelling spreads germs.
It's
so,
true.
But
wrestling spreads germs.
Yelling spreads germs.
That's like something they would tell people in Philadelphia trying to get them to quiet down.
Yelling spreads germs.
That doesn't. They'll want to yell more. So this is the first one where the crowds can actually make noise. So it's gonna be amazing.
That's gonna be probably really
fun. I'm gonna cut all this. No one cares about this.
No, I don't know.
I appreciate it. I love talking about it, but no one cares.
All right, we'll just never bring it up again.
Originally, Brian Eno planned to be part of the tour.
So I guess before this, I'm sorry. I'll set up.
It's Brian Emo, and he created emo music.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was.
So, when we talked about the David Bowie live album in '74, we talked about how, like, all he was just like doing cocaine like constantly, and he said his voice was like really weak sounding, and like he's so skinny. So by '78, he got clean and went. Him and Iggy Pop went to Germany to like get clean, and they made The Idiot, Iggy Pop's record, and then Low and Heroes, and then Lust for Life, Iggy Pop's other record in Germany. And that's like my favorite period of any artist. It's like the best, it's just the best. And David Bowie on this album is like the opposite. His voice is like the strongest it ever sounds. This band is like incredible. This was like he used this band for the next like 5 years. This album is like, it's overlooked. I think if you like this era of David Bowie, this is like amazing. And I went to see Moon Age Daydream, the David Bowie documentary that came out last year, and they show a live performance of Heroes at Earl's Court. They filmed, there's a whole 1978 David Bowie show that's like professionally filmed from England that like has never been released, and they showed clips from it. in this movie, and I was like, oh my god, they got to put that out. Like, I want to see that so bad. This is like my favorite era of like any artist. So, this album is like really, really very good. But anyway, so he was like, he was clean by this point, and like he was a very different person from the 4 years before this, musically, and just like. He also was like a Nazi for like a year.
Oh yeah, he was into that, right?
For real?
Which, he was a real trendsetter, I guess you could say.
He was just into the imagery.
He liked the aesthetic.
I guess, yeah. Well, the and the documentary actually doesn't talk. They don't talk about like that whole year, and it's like I'm pretty sure because it's like, how are you not going to talk about him being a fucking Nazi? there's Jeez. Also a fame, and I like, listen, I love David Bowie, but it's also just like any hero you are going to have is a horrible person. So he apologized for decades after this, but there's a thing of him on MTV. He's getting interviewed in the early 80s on MTV, and he's like asking the guy who has like no control over what videos they play, and he's like, how come you don't play any black artists?
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
Which absolutely was true, because they only played like white people until like Michael Jackson. Not exclusively, but Michael Jackson was like the
he's a breakthrough artist, sure.
Yeah. But it's like, weren't you a Nazi 5 years ago? you're really gonna fucking bring, you're gonna go down this road? He spent decades apologizing. So if Kanye will do that, but I don't see it.
A very good look. You'd go back to Kanye?
I don't know, because immediately when that happened, I was like, you know, David Bowie did this, and he's your favorite artist, so you got to be.
Did David Bowie say he loved Hitler? Though, is it like there are degrees, I guess.
Yeah,
you know.
Yes, no. There's interviews of him being like he said like Britain needs a fascist dictator. Ooh. And like. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. You can look it up.
I don't know how much of this. I don't know how much I want to do this episode anymore.
You Google. There's pictures of him.
Well, apparently there's pictures of him doing the Nazi salute, but that might not be true, because there's a bunch of pictures
from that day,
and none of them actually have. There's a ton of pictures taken.
His arm is never fully extended, so he didn't really mean it.
But he was a Nazi, so I mean, he was like, yeah, I was on cocaine for 4 years, and he spent the next decades apologizing for it. I don't know. Everyone is horrible, so don't have any heroes.
Don't have any heroes.
Having said that, wow, what a great record this is. Let's start over. Let's completely start over.
Originally, Brian Eno planned to be part of the tour band, but had to drop out due to health reasons. As a result, the band only had 2 weeks to rehearse for the tour. Carlos Alomar was the tour's band leader and drove the rehearsals.
I mean, they were on tour longer than they were rehearsing.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Carlos Alomar, so on these records, like Low and Heroes, David Bowie, the second side of the album, for the most part on Heroes, is instrumental. He was making these instrumental songs. And there's a clip from the Earl's Court show. Carlos Alomar is like actually, like, he has a baton. And he's like actually conducting the band. Like, he was the band leader. And he played with Bowie for like 20 years, I think.
Maybe you know the answer, but you don't. Was he part of the recording of like of Heroes and all that too? Or...
Yeah, he's on those bands.
He's on the album too.
He's on Young Americans. I think he's on every David Bowie album from like Young Americans up to I think that 87 one.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And Brian Eno, he didn't produce these records. They call it the Berlin period,
mm-hmm.
even though like the third one, Lodger, was recorded in New York, not Germany. But Brian Eno, he didn't produce it, but he was like on the records, and he's like a musical like mad scientist. He would like had all these weird.
I remember the Brian Eno is that he did like the music in airports. The when you're being like transported from like it's
and so that was like around this time too. It was like ambient music and like electronic music, like Kraftwerk and stuff.
Yeah.
So they were all like super into that because they were like, this is the future of music, which it was. They were right. And there's a song. When I Feel Love by Donna Summer came out in like 78, and that's Giorgio Moroder Brian Eno came in the studio and he played it for them, and he was like, "This this is the future of music," and he was right. Like everything sounded like everything was synthesizers and shit in the 80s.
And we love Giorgio around here.
Yeah, and he, David Bowie. A fun fact: he produced Cat People putting out Fire, that song.
Oh, really? He produced a song. He did Heart of Glass with Blondie too.
Yeah, he's
the best. He's the best. Oh, yeah. It's slightly related, but this is a music question, and I don't see what you guys think. I think I have Spotify, and some people hate Spotify, but like it gives you all the numbers of plays. And I feel like it's like the true voice of what people actually love about certain artists. And like instead of like even like certain hits kind of come up higher than others. Like you wouldn't hear certain songs growing up because the radio DJs controlled what it doesn't sound so old, what you could hear. And then you go on like, what's the most popular Beatles song? Actually, it isn't Yesterday. It isn't Hey Jude. It's like Here Comes the Sun. Like, holy shit. And I kind of always think that's kind of like this true voice of like people like really love about artists. And Heroes is Bowie's number one. It's got 391 million plays.
Wow.
And plus. And that's his most listened to song. I love that song. And I know that's about the Berlin Wall and all that. So I hear you saying about the Berlin period. That's cool. I love this.
Yeah, that song's actually about, he said in interviews that he saw a couple who one side was in West Germany and one side was in East Germany. But actually, he made that story up to cover for his producer, Tony Visconti, was having
an
affair.
Right there.
She was having an affair with somebody from West Germany, and he like saw them together, and that's what inspired him to write the song.
Wow.
Pretty juicy, pretty juicy.
That album like changed my life. That was like that wasn't the first David Bowie album I got, but that was like I bought it on vinyl. I think at Philadelphia Record Exchange on South.
You're always posing like the cover too. You're doing that.
yeah, that record is just like incredible, and this record also has Adrian Blue plays guitar on this, and Adrian Blue has the greatest like career. 5 years of any artist. He played with Frank Zappa, and then David Bowie stole him from Frank Zappa, and Frank Zappa was really mad about it. And then after David Bowie, he went to play with the Talking Heads, and then he reformed King Crimson with Robert Fripp, who plays guitar on Heroes.
Oh, he's part of them.
And all within like 5 years, it's amazing. But Adrian Belew is like one of the best guitar players ever, and he is on this record. And like a few of these songs are like the quintessential versions of these songs. And we'll get into it, but I'm just going to talk a lot. I'm sorry, everyone.
Yeah, I noticed. I'll fire it up.
The set list for the performances consisted of material from the previous year's albums, Low and Heroes, with the second half of each performance opening with a five-song sequence from The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders of Mars album. Bowie had the band learn the entirety of the Ziggy Stardust album in rehearsals, although most of the songs were never performed live on stage during the tour. The instrumental tracks are... You gotta know where we came from if you want to know where we're going. The instrumental track Art Decade typically followed the Ziggy Stardust tracks, a mellow track to follow the energy of the Ziggy Stardust material. Tracks from the 1976 album Station to Station were in the closing numbers. In the late 80s, Bowie regarded some of the songs he performed live on the tour as a bit ponderous, referring specifically to some of the long instrumental performances, such as Warzawa.
Kind of lost the crowd on those tunes. He has so many hits. He has so many songs. Like, why? Yeah.
Well, so that's the one thing I will say about this album. He does, like, the Ziggy Stardust songs, and it's just, like, they just, like, don't fit this period of what he was doing. He was doing, like, weird instrumental shit and, like, these I don't know. It just doesn't, it's not bad. It just feels like he's just like, he's over this. And actually, so I didn't know this till researching this. There's a box set that came out called A New Career at a New Town, which is a song off Low. And there's two songs from the Philly show that weren't on the record. And one of them is Suffragette City from Ziggy Stardust. And the other one is Gene Genie off the album after that, Aladdin Sane. And they're both like really interesting. If you're a fan of this album, Looked at, it's on Spotify and stuff. It's like an 11 CD box set of this period that they put out. And it has like, yeah, these two extra songs that they found. They only found doing research for these box sets because they were like remastering the tapes and shit. And they found like tapes of these like two extra songs that had never been released.
When they made them, they probably were like, well, these are mediocre. So,
yeah, it was just like, you know, it was a double album. So you can only fit
trimming the fat.
You could only fit. But this is another thing I found out. I was trying to find out specifically what songs from stage are recorded Active Spectrum, and I couldn't really find any. But in researching this, there's a quote. There's a booklet that came in that box set by Tony Visconti, and I had never heard this. This was when they were recording Low in 76, which is like the instrumental, these weird instrumental songs. Recording during week 3 and week 4 was at a much slower pace. Melodies, lyrics, and vocals were needed. Speed of Life and A New Career in a New Town, the both songs, were originally intended to have a vocal on them, but David decided to keep them as instrumental bookends to side one. Low became more radical as David sang just 5 songs. This later infuriated RCA record executives who tried to block the album's release, and one suggested he go back to Philadelphia and make Young Americans 2.
Whoa.
So they were just like, we don't want to hear this fucking, we don't know what this is. We want to write, can you write hit songs again?
We want the long hots, baby.
We really would appreciate the hit songs.
Have you tried cocaine? Have you gotten back on drugs?
Yeah, we've heard they're doing wonderful things.
I know you like that kind of music, but how about we try some hits?
Yeah, we know you like Kraftwerk.
You like Kraftwerk, but how about hits?
A short intermission split a typical night's show into 2 parts, and for the second, Bowie wore a snakeskin drape coat and huge baggy white pants.
Very cool look. A very cool look.
He's more like cleaned up. This was around the period he did the song with Bing Crosby, where he was like, I'm not a Nazi anymore. I'm hanging out with Bing Crosby.
Nothing more merry.
Yeah.
Guy hangs out with JFK. I mean, come on.
I don't like that Bing Crosby stuff. I've said it before.
No, I know. Yeah, I know. You really don't.
Yo, when did Bowie?
Maybe as much as the Nazis.
When I was a kid, I taped. Remember the cartoon? It was like a mini short film. It was called The Snowman.
The Snowman.
The Falcon,
yeah.
And the Snowman.
No, not the Falcon and the Snowman. It was just called Snowman, and it was like a little instrumental like cartoon. And when it aired on WHYY, Bowie introduced it, and he wears the scarf the little boy in the cartoon wears, and it's like a whimsical cartoon. And Bowie kind of implies that he's the little boy in the cartoon.
It's called The Falcon and the Snowman, right?
No, it's called The Snowman.
No.
Why do you keep saying that?
It's called The Snowman.
The Falcon and the Snowman, 1985.
Oh, there is a bird in it. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Oh, wait. I don't know. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I'm... Please believe me. It's called The Snowman. There's a song... Like, there's, like, even, like, a famous song from it. And I guess it's from 1982. But maybe it was from a certain broadcast, but Bowie introduces it, and... When I bought it, I got later, but they're Bowie's cut from it. But when I was a kid, I taped it off of TV, or my mom taped it off TV. And he introduces it, and there's a look at the snowman melts and gives the little boy a scarf. And then in the end, Bowie has the scarf on. And it's so when I was like, that was my first introduction to David Bowie, actually. Was just
I'm probably going to cut this, but so that is called The Snowman, but there's a David Bowie song in a movie called The Falcon and the Snowman.
Okay,
also.
And I assure you it's not that.
I know, I said that, but I'm just saying that's why I thought that.
This was during his Snowman period. This was
a little known period of David Bowie.
This is when he was really into carrots.
All he was doing was carrots.
All he was doing was carrots.
That was his whole diet.
And coal. And top hats.
Eating fistfuls of snow, washing it down. He'd only eat distilled snow.
Well, yeah. Walking on the Air, beautiful song on The Snowman. David Bowie, the little boy in the cartoon.
For the stages tour, the Stark fluorescent tube lighting approach of the previous 1976 tour was further developed and expanded to create a large cage of tube lighting, which enclosed the stage with the ability to pulsate moodily during the slower instrumental pieces and flash frantically during the faster songs.
You can see it on the cover of the album. He's on stage and it's just like, yeah, like...
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Lights.
Yeah. When he rolled through town last time, he had the cherry picker that was always malfunctioning, but now he's got this...
Theater Mike.
Now he's got this whole... and Theater Mike, yeah.
And he fired Theater Mike.
Theater Mike. A good callback.
Theater Mike was out on his ass by... Yeah, he didn't work at the Spectrum. Theater Mike doesn't work arenas. That's Arena Mike's job.
No, he's Theater Mike.
He's Theater Mike. The performances at the Philadelphia Spectrum were recorded for the live album Stage. This was not Bowie's first time at the Spectrum. He'd performed there in 74 to sold-out crowds. More recently, he'd teamed up with Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra to record the most iconic version of Peter and the Wolf ever recorded.
Whoa, you can't just say that. I got to cut
that's
that.
That's what it says. What the internet that's what the internet says.
Those are fighting words.
That's what the internet says. I don't know. Name them. Okay, what's a better version of Peter and the Wolf? Name five.
Name
five Peter and the Wolves.
I don't know any, but
I thought
know
you
were
into music.
We're going to get an email
from somebody. I thought you guys were
into
music. You know.
Somebody's going to email us.
Look, we're going to get hate mail no matter what, so at least we can...
Signed Peter.
Control what it's about.
Right, like we're intentionally saying incendiary things like David Bowie has the best version of Peter and the Wolf out there.
I think we said way more incendiary things about David Bowie.
If you disagree, fight me. Find me abroad in Oregon at Marconi Park.
I'll meet you at the Philadelphia Academy of Music. Bring your brass knuckles.
Bring your brass knuckles, yeah. And your five toughest friends. Have our switchblades and dance.
Yeah, to dance off. All your friends better have at least 2 years of tap. Otherwise, they are going to get housed.
They better have some rhythm. That's all I got to say.
So because of Bowie's close relationship with Philadelphia, it made perfect sense to record another album here, his second live album.
Makes sense to me. The first one was such a dud, so why don't I do it again?
The show primarily included material from Bowie's most recent studio albums to that date, like we mentioned, Station to Station, Low and Heroes, but also contained five songs from The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and The Spiders of Mars, like we said, aside from Bowie's core team of Carlos Alomar, Dennis Davis, and George Murray, the band included ex-Frank Zappa sideman Adrian Blue on guitar, Simon House from Hawkwind on electric violin, Roger Powell, best known for his work with Todd Rundgren in the group Utopia on keyboards, and Sean Mays on piano, string ensemble, and backup vocals. All would reunite the following year on Bowie's next studio LP, Lodger. So they had a really good time together. These guys really grooved.
Poor Frank Zappa. Finds all this young talent, everyone just steals them. He's like...
There's a story of Adrian Blue talking about that when David Bowie wanted to hire him, and... He met Frank Zappa.
Dude, Frank Zappa turned like Boys and the Men and with his like with their instruments, and then like all these dudes just come and like pluck them away. Like, yeah, you done saying about farts? Well, you want
to? You want to make real money?
You want to make some real money? Come with me. And like, and poor Frank Zappa. Like, oh, I have to.
So David Bowie was like trying to like be nice and like explain it to him. And Frank Zappa was being a dickhead, and he kept calling him Captain Tom. He wouldn't call him Major Tom. He was like, okay, Captain Tom.
Oh,
and he was just like being an asshole, and like so like they left, and Adrian Blue said David Bowie. He's like, in his very British sense of humor, turned to me and was like, I thought that went pretty well.
But what, like, Zappa, what else he gonna do? He has nothing. All he can do is just be rude and just let everybody know he doesn't like it. We obviously love Zappa around here too.
Oh yeah.
Sean Mays recalled that for the Spectrum shows, Bowie slowed down the tempo of most of the songs for the recording. This was the only night such a change was made.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. I don't know, why do you guys think that they would do it like that?
Just to fill time on the album. What if we just play one really long song?
That's so funny. I don't know, because like most of the time, like you're in a band, like you make a recording, and then when the band goes to play it live in front of everybody, you always play it faster. It's just like it's just a thing that happens, you know. So it's kind of interesting that for them to be aware of that in this weird way.
Well, so then it's a choice. He wants it to sound more. He's trying to make it sound more like.
He's trying to make it sound more like a studio album, okay. I guess. Okay. He's not. I don't know. But that's just kind of like a thing that bands will do. Like you record your song in the studio and then you play it. You play it faster. It's just how it is. I don't know. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
In the liner notes for the CD reissue in 2005, recording engineer Tony Visconti explains that the ambient songs were recorded via a direct electronic feed from the instruments rather than through microphones, and that the audience was turned way down during these performances. Apparently, the U.S. audiences, contrary to Australian audiences, for instance, were, in Visconti's words, quote, a little too impatient for David to get on the stage and rock the songs, end quote.
Ah, I see. So they plugged right into the board.
Australians were into it. They knew what was up.
So, the Philadelphians were cut from the record.
Yes, they were turned all the way down. They turned them all the way down.
We don't need them. We don't need them anyway.
I can't hear myself in the monitor. Pyramid, turn me up. Less Zito. More Bowie.
Less Zito.
Less Bowie, more of the crowd.
More of the crowd.
More crowd. More. Let's just put out all crowd noise.
More crowd. Why else would you buy a live record? You want the crowd, the extra band member.
If anybody wants to check out our DJ Kool episode, they came to Philadelphia to record.
That's true.
To record because of the crowd. They wanted a hype crowd for their live album. I think that's an asset. It's a feature, not a bug, when you're coming to Philadelphia to record.
Yeah, David.
You used to know that.
Or Visconti, I mean.
The tour band remembered that, quote, every show was taped, end quote, for Bowie's private use. And the tapes were carefully guarded by Alomar. So there's like a secret vault somewhere where every night is on.
He slept with a gun in front of him. No one's touching these live tapes. I would love to hear some of those, man. That's amazing. He also does Alabama song, which The Doors covered. It's the
Alabama whiskey song.
Yeah, he does that. It's like
an old standard.
Kurt Weill. Kurt Weill. Moon of Alabama. Yeah, Bowie does a really weird version of it. That's not like the Doors version. It's like weird. It's very cool.
Unlike that Doors version.
That's the most famous one, I guess. I'll say it.
I guess.
Yes. I actually never heard another version of it.
Now you can.
It's no Eugene Ormandy and David Bowie, Peter and the Wolf, that's for sure. Stage is generally considered more relaxed than Bowie's previous live album, David Live. The record was praised on its initial vinyl release for the fidelity with which the band was able to emulate the effects-filled numbers from Low and Heroes in concert.
That's awesome. It's really, really great. Like, I would say more for the stuff he was doing around that time. Like, the Ziggy songs are, like, fine, but and like the bass playing and like just this band is just like incredible.
At the same time, because Bowie had rarely tampered with the arrangements in contrast to his methods on David Live, Stage added little to what was available on the original albums and was seen by some commentators as simply a marketing exercise that did not do justice to a memorable series of live concerts.
I hope they release that concert from Earl's Court. Someday, because I would like to see what the songs sound like there. Because if he slowed them all down, I would like to hear what if you played.
Well, this is. I don't really. I mean, I've probably listened to this album once before, listening to it for the podcast, and it is a way more mellow album than David Live, which has like a ton of energy and emotion, and you're like you feel him reaching, and I just don't get any of that from this album. It does feel like him doing covers of himself.
Well, yeah, no, I don't agree with that at all. But
controversial opinion
for the Ziggy Stardust stuff, maybe, but like the for the, I mean, I also like I said, I don't, I'm biased, so and I've been listening to this since I was a teenager, so I'm like, oh, it's so good, but I don't know.
I see the criticism towards David Live, and I don't agree with that because that's the one I listen to all the time with Trove, and so that's the one I think is awesome. But like we have this conversation about Adam Sandler movies all the time too. Sometimes people's favorite is Happy Gilmore. Sometimes your favorite is Billy Madison, and it really just depends on which one you saw first.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm.
It's just like David Bowie.
I think they're both great.
Both equally great.
Both great. No, I love David Live. Come on. It even does Knock on Wood. And it just changes.
A lot of energy in that one.
I like this one better.
Yeah, all right, well.
I'll tell you what's missing is the Long Hots and Cocaine.
No, I like that. This one's all about tea and art.
Tea and
not
art.
Not cocaine. and long hots. Clean living.
Clean living. Yogurt.
And not being
full,
a Nazi.
Full fat yogurt. Eat it every day.
It's very healthy.
Very healthy. No more fried things for me.
That's what David Bowie said right before David he got Bowie on stage say. To record stage.
We're so alike.
The album was criticized for lacking a live atmosphere, thanks to the recording being largely taken from direct instruments and microphone feeds, which increased sound quality but minimized crowd noise.
Just do it in the studio, then. Just make it in the studio.
No, I like that because they can mix. Like the mix is like the bass is like right up front, and like
But they're going right into the board. But they're like. Whatever.
But they mixed. I think the point is that they're being criticized that the audience was turned way down, so it doesn't feel like a live concert.
Right.
What makes it live?
Right.
Rolling Stone was like, "We need more Philly, less David." They.
I
know what's up.
After we did the episode on Philly Soul and all that, I got that Billy Paul record, right? And it's a live record with no audience, and it's like, it's truly weird. They perform they perform their live act, but no one. It sounds like they're in a studio. It's like live at the club, and there's no crowd, and it's really weird. And it kind of is like this.
No one was there. No one came to the show.
One guy's like,
yeah, he's mopping the floor,
making requests that they don't. You know, like, come on.
The original concert running order was also changed with fades between tracks, similar to a studio album. Even the cover picture came in for criticism, more so because the rest of the package contained only variations of the same shot.
You should probably take at least two pictures.
The photographer was like, I only got five pics left of my camera. Yeah, it's a different time. You didn't have... Yeah, it was film.
Yeah. He was waiting for something cool to happen. You didn't want to waste his film.
And nothing cool happens. What do you want me to do?
In a review of the 1991 re-release, Matt Snow of Q stated that, quote, performances are faster than the studio originals and suffer for it. What they gain in live jauntiness, not exactly a quality they were crying out for, they lose in power and intensity.
They should have just sped the tape up and made them a little faster. And then it would have fast, higher voices.
Like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah.
They slowed it down and this guy's still complaining it's too fast.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's the 90s. I don't know. What did they not complain about in 1991?
Everyone had horrible opinions in the 90s.
Yeah, it's a fact.
The version of Stay and the version of Station to Station is like, they're like the quintessential versions of those songs. What in the World, he does slow and then he speeds it up. Breaking Glass is like super funkier. These people are wrong, man. This record is so good. You're wrong, Matt Snow of Q.
Well, luckily every music critic is out of work, so.
Yeah, I used to be a music critic.
Really taking a dump on the grave there.
It used to be you would have to look at a music reviewer to tell you if something was good or not, and you're like, all right, well, I'm gonna save my $20. Now, who gives a shit what that guy thinks? Now I go to Spotify and make my own opinion.
Yeah. No, it's true.
It's true. I used to spend money on all kinds of shitty records someone would recommend it because they were a professional reviewer, you know? Now yeah. I could, Bierman's like, check this out. I go, okay.
Just ask me.
It costs me nothing. It's Spotify. It's great. Well, whatever, $10.
Saying I should start charging you for those recommendations.
Well, I'm going to start charging you for my recommendations. How about that? How about we call it even? Charge Zito. He's the one who benefits the most. He's the one who benefits the most because he just gets groovy tunes nonstop around the show.
Oh, yeah. He loves it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unsubscribe.
Unsubscribe.
A 2005 reissue saw many of the criticisms of the original LP addressed. In his review of the reissue, Chris Roberts of Uncut said that the combination of low Heroes period material and songs from Ziggy Stardust resulted in a live album that was, quote, an eerie clattering between the two stools, end quote. He said that the improvements in the sound carried out by Tony Visconti and the addition of Stay and the brilliant Bee, My Wife, made the new version of Stage, quote, essential for David Freaks Everywhere, end quote.
So I think that's the first version that I heard when it came out, when they reissued it in 2005. So that one, I guess, did clear up a lot of the, like, audio problems and shit. Because, like, so it's the same thing with David Live, I think, where it's, like, the audio quality probably wasn't the best when it came out. But then, like, in the reissues, it's like, oh, this actually is really good. So I'm only going off the 2005 reissue. Because I didn't know that
going
Stay...
Going off the 2005, does the 2005 reissue have more crowd in it? Does it have more of a live feel?
After each song, you can, like, hear the crowds and shit. Yeah, but I mean, but I didn't know it didn't have... The original doesn't have Stay and Be My Wife, because I'm telling you, that version of Stay is, like, the best version. So that definitely does change the whole thing. Like I said, I agree with the one reviewer was, like, the Ziggy Stardust stuff is, like, it just doesn't fit what he was doing at the time. And it's like, it's not bad, but it's just like, it just seems like I got to do these songs.
Well, and you got to be people like me going to the show. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Booing them. Yo, I want to hear pretty things. I don't want to hear this avant-garde crap.
That's why you had to turn down the. That's
yeah, like, it was me yelling.
Yeah. Do Rocket Man.
Do Rocket Man.
He didn't do that. That's not him. But he didn't do that one.
Do Uptown Girl. Let's spend the night together.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this album. But if you're not a David Bowie fan, I don't know. It's probably nothing special. But the version of Station to Station is like 9 minutes long. And they play that in that documentary. They use that.
You're really selling
that
it.
It's great. It's great. Well, I'm trying to make money off this because if you buy it, we get 10 cents from Spotify if you say you listened from. Well, if a million people listen,
yeah, drop.
I don't think
drop our name at Spotify and they give us a nickel. They give us a wooden nickel.
We get nothing from this broadcast. So there's no point of kissing up to anyone, Bierman.
I'm not. I said he was we said he was a Nazi for an hour. I'm not kissing up to anybody.
All right, respect.
Look it up. I didn't make it up. You look it up.
Look it up. I Google imaged it as you were saying it. Just watch the snowman thing instead. Don't look at the Nazi stuff.
this look at his snowman period, not his Nazi period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess my takeaway is that Peter and the Wolf with Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra and David Bowie is probably a little better than stage. So maybe check that out instead.
You better get someone else to start your car tonight, dude.
Damn.
Was you insulting Peter and the Wolf? You get a brick thrown through your window.
Yeah.
They're like, the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra's version of Peter and the Wolf is the superior version. Everybody knows this.
Okay, that's pretty much all there is to know about Bowie at the Spectrum. Please check out our website, www.southfellini.com. That's SOUTHFELLINI.com for cool Philly-inspired merch. Visit us at 1507 East Passyunk Avenue in beautiful South Philly, Thursday through Sunday, 12 to 5 this winter season. Check us out on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. We're at South Fellini everywhere. Follow along and join the conversation. We want to hear from you. Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, get boosted, and whatever you do, don't be bored.
Is South Fellini the best? Boy, I guess.